You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
McKinnon is in at running back. First down and goal to go. Play action fake. Right side throw. Touchdown! Kansas City! McCole Hardman! McCole Hardman with the catch on the right side. A 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game 25-22. And the Chiefs Kingdom has started its own history class. Because for the first time in 6,944 days, there is a back-to-back Super Bowl champion, and it is the Kansas City Chiefs, champions of Super Bowl 58 on the heels of Super Bowl 57. The Chiefs do it in overtime.
Mitch Holt is with the call. Chiefs Radio Network. They done it again. The Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, 2, Mecole Hardman, 3-yard touch. Yes, Mecole Hardman. 3-yard touchdown pass with 3 seconds left in overtime. Chiefs rally past the Niners, 25-22 in Super Bowl 58. They are the first repeat champion in 19 years, and they have a chance to be the first team ever next season to three-peat. Dan Hansis here with Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. We are heroes both. The backdrop, we are in the end zone, coming right behind the end zone where Patrick Mahomes hit Hardman to win the Super Bowl and another Super Bowl MVP, boys. And what a treat, overtime.
For so much of this game, we're talking to each other, being like, no, it's kind of a boring Super Bowl. Like, right. Let's pick it up here.
Yeah.
And once that fourth quarter started, really the end of the third, once the Chiefs got that touchdown, it was an all-time classic. And I just think of how this season played out for the Chiefs and how his teammates and their struggles, in a sense, made him have to be a game manager. And this was the conversation with Purdy all season, like, game changer, game manager. And what I saw tonight out of Mahomes was what I've seen out of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game, which is that he did everything that needed to be done in the moment that needed it to be done. And it wasn't flashy plays. It was the right decisions on the last drive of regulation. It was obviously the right decisions of when to run in overtime and him just being calm, being patient when he needed to, being aggressive when he needed to, and just always doing the right thing because that's what great quarterbacks do.
It was almost like a microcosm of their season because the Chiefs in the first half stuck in mud, 3 punts, a big fumble that caused a big problem, and they get out of there with a field goal, and you're lucky at that point to be down 10-3 at the half. And then over their final 4 possessions, the Chiefs scored 19 points. Mm. And it's sort of the way they closed their season in the playoffs. And I feel like it was just a year ago that we were in Arizona, and I was thinking to myself and saying on our Super Bowl recap show that there's this inevitable nature to Patrick Mahomes and to the Chiefs in general. And it's like, it happened again. And I can't help but flip the script and think of, like, my gosh, it happened again to Kyle Shanahan. It's the second time that the Niners had a 10-point lead on Mahomes. It's the 4th Super Bowl that Mahomes faced a 10-point deficit. He's won 3 of them. He did it again tonight. So there is this inevitable sense that the Chiefs will always find a way.
And I know where you're coming from, Greg, when you call him the game manager, but I find it disrespectful because he's a game general. Nay, he's a game commander. He is someone that can do everything. If you need him to be smart with the football, nobody's better. If you need him to take risks and be a downfield gunslinger, he's done that in his career.
When I say it, I just mean decision maker.
I know.
Decision maker.
And you're trying to, and I respect where you're coming. You're trying to change the stigma a little bit of game manager.
Sure.
But what Mahomes did again, and seeing him, they ran, by the way, the same Andy Reid, that son of a gun, they run the same play that they ran to get the big touchdown to Tony in last year's Super Bowl, but substituting Tony, a healthy scratch in this game, with Mecole Hardman, a guy that they said bye-bye to, who goes to the Jets, bombs out. They move him, and he lands with KC, and then makes the, you know, one of the biggest catches in Super Bowl history. It's an amazing story, and to see it right in front of us, it's a reminder again how lucky we are, and also to see him running Mahomes through the back of the end zone and then up the far sideline. Just the first thing that came to my mind is this is the guy. I think when you look at what he's done now in 7 years, and I said this during the week at Radio Row, that this was such a huge moment for Mahomes and Reed, for them now to both get another title. It's unreal, and he's absolutely in the conversation, greatest of all time. I think he's 28 years old by kickoff next year.
Yeah, and he had that incredible 22-yard run that called back the run he had against the Eagles a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the wide-open Mecole Hardman touchdown. This season, NGS noted that he had 8 more touchdowns to wide-open wide receivers than anyone in the game. Like, it's like they are scheming them up perfectly. It won them the Super Bowl a year ago. It happened again today. And I'm with you. I just look at this team, and it's like the way at the half, Travis Kelce had one catch for 1 yard, and we were talking about the fact that he, you know, marched up to Andy Reid with vitriol and anger and shoved his coach. It's like that seemed like it could have become the story of the game if they continue to melt. Instead, that feels like 14 years ago at this point.
Right. The second half starts with them throwing a pitch to Pacheco, and they take a 12-yard loss and a fumble. And then Mahomes throws one of the worst passes of his career for an interception. And the Chiefs' defense was such a big part of this. We'll get to them. But the two turnovers that the Chiefs had, the Chiefs' defense then steps up with a three and out immediately and doesn't make it count. But while we're kind of just talking Mahomes and the game management, like, it does feel inevitable that this all happened. And yet there were so many little parts of the game. And when I'm thinking of that last drive, he gets the ball back in regulation, needing 3 points, 1:53 to go. And they got the ball to the 49ers 43 in no time at all, in less than a minute. And that was where he was being patient. He was taking 9 yards, 3 yards, 12 yards, 8 yards. So he wasn't going for these chunk plays. He's taking what's there, but they did it very quickly. They got out of bounds. They didn't use their timeouts there. Then you get into overtime. A couple different spots there. The 3rd and 6 to Rashee Rice. That was a really nice catch. Yep. where Mahomes is under pressure. That was not like a given. If they don't get that, you're at 4th and 6 with the season on the line. You have a 4th and 1. You need 1 yard, and the game stops, and we're like, what's Andy Reid going to do in this spot? He goes back to that read option. I think it was Chase Young that they took advantage, cutting inside. The 3rd and 1, he knows exactly when to scramble. Like, just every decision, even the Kelce catch at the end of regulation that set up the chip shot. At that point, if they did not pick up that first down, that's a 50-yard field goal for Bucker just to keep the game alive with some time there. And each time it's like those were the passes that are exactly on the money. That's why he's the best player I've ever seen.
Next Gen Stats had an incredible stat on that Kelce reception, that catch and run, that he reached something about, I think, 19.8 miles per hour. It was the fastest he had run on a catch since 2018. And that is adrenaline. That's the Super Bowl.
Awesome.
That's just that, you know, it's just a different world. And the fact that Mahomes, you know, when you talk about who's, and we don't want to overlook Tom Brady, and that, and I'm sure there are Patriots fans yelling as they're listening, like, shut up about Mahomes being the best ever, because Brady won 7, and Brady had massive moments like this too, and that's true. So I really don't want to have that conversation.
No.
But I just want to point out that for Mahomes, the way he is so calm and collected in these spots, as Brady was, as Joe Montana was, that always sticks with me watching these games. There's not a moment of panic. Here is Patrick Mahomes on CBS after the game talking about where the Niners now are in history. And by the way, Patrick Mahomes, 7-0 in the playoffs over the last 2 years with 2 titles and 15-3 in his remarkable career, 7 seasons in.
So is it a dynasty now?
Yeah, it's the start of one. We're not done. I know we're going to celebrate tonight, celebrate the Pride Wednesday, Kansas City, but we're not done. We've got a young team. We'll keep this thing going.
I'd also say that Mahomes has won these Super Bowls with, it's not the same star-studded lineup in each of these victories. It's different types of teams. And I think you're right to call him a game manager in a positive sense, in that he had to be a different type of quarterback with different players around him this season. It's like their defense, I think, saved them in the first half, absolutely. Get them out of trouble. But it's like, look at who he's surrounded. If you were to pair these two teams and you were to put an offensive lineup of like the all-star team, it's like it's heavily favoring the Niners. And it's not favoring the Chiefs. And it doesn't really matter because Patrick Mahomes doesn't really care who's on the team.
Right. And there's that one great throw he had to Hardman, which we had a great view. We watched this game in two different spots. We were in the auxiliary press box, which is basically up in the third deck for the first 2.5 quarters of the game.
Smashed together.
Right. And that throw from that angle, actually, it was absolutely perfect to see that.
Gorgeous.
He had no business throwing that ball because Hardman's bracketed on both sides, but it's such an impossible throw, and Hardman makes a terrific play. But other than that, you don't think of, like, incredible athleticism in the way that we did in 2018 in his first season as a starter, 2019 when he won the Super Bowl for the first time. And that's why you think Mahomes is thinking, yeah, we're just getting started, because this skill set where he's winning up here along with that incredible arm he has is going to age well.
Are you doing it?
What?
Hey, he's reaching the point in his career when the mental side
that
of things
is, actually
is catching up with the physical.
That is it. And of course,
true.
Tom Brady's accomplished the most ever.
Yes.
But no one in the history of the NFL's had a first 7 seasons of their career like Patrick Mahomes. It's not even close. It's not an argument. It's the best start to a season any player's ever had.
We'll
by
see.
Far.
This could, we don't know. You never know. This could be the last time he's ever on the stage. That weirder things have happened. But that's
yeah,
why
it's
I
like
thought
an Adam Bob lands on the United States.
I'm just saying, right. Ask Dan Marino in 1984, what he would have thought. There's
right.
many
but
examples.
But that's like the difference between Dan Marino's career, who was thought to be the best ever in a certain light, and what Patrick Mahomes has done is like completely unprecedented.
I mean, it's remarkable. And he finished 34 of 46, 333 yards, averaged 7.2 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns, that one ugly pick. Pass rating 99.3. And, you know, I got to give credit to his receivers because they didn't build the best skill group around him this year. We know that. Even throughout the playoffs and even through certainly half of this game, it was apparent that they're still missing Tyreek Hill or someone that can really make things easier for Patrick Mahomes, which makes his achievements even greater. But I look down at you have Kelce, even though he's 1-for-1 at the half, he finishes 9-for-93 on 10 targets, but then he pretty much spreads it out. 3 catches for Hardman, 3 for Justin Watson, 6-for-39 for Rashee Rice. Pacheco has 6-for-33. Noah Gray, 2-for-22. MVS, 3 catches. Jarrett McKinnon, 2. I don't remember a drop in
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
That.
They flipped that script.
Watson had one where the ball was a little behind him.
I remember that play.
But it was a clean performance by undercard type players.
These guys, there's a certain ceiling with many of these guys, and maybe even with Kelce at this point in his career. But they maxed out what they were able to do, and I think you have to give them credit as well because it's not just Mahomes. Like that, the Rashee Rice catch in overtime is a perfect example. Was it overtime or the end of the fourth quarter?
That was overtime.
You know, that ball could have went through his hands.
It was up there.
You know, like that is
a little heater.
These and the pressures at the highest levels, and these guys made the catches and got it done. So a great performance by the offense after a slow start, and the defense did what the defense did all year long.
And a couple plays before that Mecole Hardman game winner, there was the Kelce catch right up the gut of the field where it looked like he had 1 or 2 yards, and he just barreled and created a pile and went right down to the goal line almost. It's like Kelce is part of this too. It's like his fastest run time comes in this game after we were saying he lost a step all year long. It's like everything that we were complaining about and feeling nagged about with the Chiefs just vanished in the last month.
Right. And
that's what the great teams do.
Yeah.
They have that extra year.
He had a couple of crucial third down conversions. So did Rice. I was annoyed, though, that Kelce play in the red zone where they almost won the Super Bowl there. I had the phone up. We got a great spot. This is the game day morning spot that they taped at during the show. And I had my phone up for that play, and I was like, oh, this is going to be amazing. Kelce's going to win the Super Bowl. That didn't happen. Then forgot to have it up for the Mecole Hardman Super Bowl winning play.
I had it. I'll send it to you, buddy. I got you.
And just to correct you, it's the Around the NFL set where Game Day Morning filmed earlier today.
Well
That's
done.
A great point.
In fact, there's the back of my chair, there's a piece of tape that says Rich on it. If we could get Dan put over the Rich tape, I would appreciate that, Eric, over there in the corner.
So you mentioned Spagnuolo, them doing it like they did it all season. And I think of a couple plays in this game for Spagnuolo to do what he did all season. 2 monster third downs. It's a 2-minute warning in regulation. It's almost easy to forget now. It feels a long time ago. The score is 16-16. It's third and four. The 49ers have the ball. If the 49ers get 4 yards on that play, they win the Super Bowl, very likely. I mean, the Chiefs could have used all their timeouts and they could have gotten no yards. You could, maybe it doesn't happen. But basically, it's third and four. You get just 4 yards. You don't need a touchdown on the play, and you win the Super Bowl. Spags sends pressure there. It's Trent McDuffie. He gets in clean. It felt like Trent McDuffie was blitzing this whole game. They blitz more than 50% of the time. He gets out there right away. Purdy really has no chance on that play. Great job. Then in overtime, Purdy makes a couple great plays on that drive. Nice throws. Had like a hesitation where he got Karloftis on him. Got him to down to the 15. I thought Purdy was fine in this game. He played well. Third and four. Again, season on the line. Can you stop them from getting a touchdown? Chris Jones gets in totally clean. They sent the house.
All game.
And who is that on? Is it on the 49ers coaches? Is it on Purdy? Is it on the offensive line? Like, is it just giving Spagnuolo the credit for winning in big spots? I'm not smart enough to really know, but I do know Spagnuolo won in those spots. Purdy had a wide-open receiver on that play that he had no chance to get it to because the pressure was on him right away, and that wins the Super Bowl. That's the difference between winning and losing. Points.
There were a couple huge plays like that, and they had 11 hurries, and a bunch of those came from defensive backs, and we've been seeing that from Spags all year long, and I don't know if it went on. Like, we had Colleen Wolf down on the field. The first person she interviewed was Spags, and it's like, by the way, this is like, I'm not calling it like, you know, a Ryan moment with Ditka, but it's like he is the reason they got here just as much as the offense.
And that's, it still scratches my head why no one even sniffed around him as a head coach. When you talk about, and we can talk about this at the end of the show.
I think
it's a good way to. All right, Bill Belichick doesn't have a job either. When we talk about some legacy stuff and what the Chiefs can do going forward, we'll get to that because Spags is coming back, as is Reed, as is Mahomes, as is Kelsey. Some stats about this Chiefs defense. And then we'll take a break and we'll do a little talk from the Niners side of things. Brock Purdy completed 12 of his 19 attempts against the blitz for 131 and a touchdown. He got sacked once. The Chiefs defense blitz, as you said, Greg, on 51.2% of dropbacks, their fourth highest rate in a game under Spags. So they turned up the heat in a big way in this game. And one more stat from Next Gen. The Chiefs defense generated a season high 9 unblocked pressures in Super Bowl 58, all of which came on blitzes. So obviously the game plan was to get after Purdy, and I thought it was notable late in the game a couple times when Spags held back the Dogs. That led to some things that were fortuitous for San Francisco.
3rd and 12 in overtime, you're right.
The holding.
He didn't send it, and that helped lead the 49ers. Those numbers, they sound decent from Purdy. He avoided mistakes. I think he played well enough to win. I saw a take afterwards that was like, Shanahan needs a better quarterback to get over the hump. I'm like, this is not the game for it. They had this game. Not that their offense played great, but to me that was more about the coaching. Maybe when Purdy's in his eighth year, he'll be able to fix protections in a way that he can't now. It's hard to say. But that's a 4.5 yards per attempt on those throws plus the sack. That is an extremely low number for a guy who set the NFL record for yards per attempt this season.
All right, let's take a break, and when we return, yes, we'll continue to churn through and dig through Super Bowl 58. I look back on the field behind us, and there's still, I don't know, I'm going to say about 500 people littered on the field, confetti everywhere, but it's starting to die down.
We have Taylor Swift out there.
Wait, is that Chris Berman literally live on television on a set like 50 yards away from us, maybe even less than that? That's how close we are to being Chris Berman, for you
That's
to really be in the next Chris Berman.
That's the goal in every way. I want to be Chris Berman. All right, let's take a break and we'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Second and 10, Niners up 3-0. Purdy going to throw a double pass. Back to Juwan Jennings. A throwback across the field to McCaffrey. He's got it. 20, 10, 5, touchdown! San Francisco!
CMC, enter the Dragon, baby! 6 points on a trick play!
By the way, it's time for the Sunday Drive, presented by the first ever Toyota Grand Highlander. Oh, man, better times for the 49ers on Super Bowl Sunday. Christian McCaffrey, the 21-yard pass from Juwan Jennings, who was... he was shaping up as a potential Super Bowl MVP for a bit in this game. It didn't work out, obviously. That was the call from Greg Papa and Tim Ryan of KNBR. That play put the Niners up 10-0 in this game. And as Mark pointed out, that is a double-digit lead that the Niners and Kyle Shanahan in his career, it's haunting. And it's another haunting loss for the 49ers, another gut punch loss for the 49ers, who did a lot of things right in this game. But once again, when it was time to close the game out, when it was time to kind of put your foot on the throat of the Chiefs, they kept on letting them off the hook. They let them hang around, and eventually it got them beat.
They did, and it's got to be gut-wrenching for Niners fans to process this, because it's a team that went 3-for-12 on third down, and it really showed. I thought that they just didn't make enough of their opportunities to go into halftime up just 10-3. It should have been more. And like, we were up there, you know, when we were higher up in the stadium, thinking there were multiple times where you could have slashed the neck of the Chiefs, and they just could not do it. And it's their defense, though, after a couple weeks of like the defense being the focal point and the problem, played a great game early on. They really did. And it's the offense, I thought, that came out. And you mentioned, is it coaching? What was it? Because it's not just on Brock Purdy. But they come out of the second half of halftime with 3 fizzle-out punts. And it's like that's where, in that intermittent time, the Chiefs started warming up. And I want to point to one moment, too, late in the game where it was actually in overtime. I want to ask your opinion, because it's that 3rd and 4 play where Purdy is pressured on his pass, and it's incomplete. It's a Chris Jones pressure that I think absolutely sets up a Shanahan moment for the ages. Let's listen to that call.
McCaffrey comes in motion. They fake the jet to him. Purdy throws it hot and overthrows his receiver, incomplete. Big-time rush, Chris Jones. Jennings was the intended receiver, but Purdy had to just get rid of the football. And now what does San Francisco do? This is interesting. At 4th and 4.
And so, you know, Chris Jones, team high 6 pressures on the game, a game changer right there. I mean, that's today's NFL. It's then 4th and 4 on the KC9, and they kick the field goal, which is a very Shanahan lever pull right there. And part of me was like, wait a minute, you could leave the Chiefs on their 9-yard line if you go for it and you don't get it. But do you not just go for it and sink a knife into the Chiefs' heart right here? And instead they go for the field goal, and there's plenty of time left for the Chiefs to come back at that point.
Right. That's OT, and it really brings up this idea that I think in the analytical community would be the rule book, which would be you would defer in overtime, and that's so that you kind of know what the other team does, because the playoff overtime rules are different than regulation. Each team is guaranteed a possession, even if you give up a touchdown. And so in that spot, you'd almost love to know if you needed a touchdown or not. Now, he could have been bold and just gone for it. I'm with you, because what are the odds we're going to, you know, stop the Chiefs anyways? We need touchdowns. And one of the reasons they were in this game is because Kyle Shanahan did a very un-Kyle Shanahan move, and he did go for it on 4th and 3, down 3 points.
That blew my mind. And I know we're living in a Dan Campbell world now, and this is supposed to always be, the bot says you go for it. But it takes a serious amount of onions. I got to give I thought it was the wrong move, but they have a 4th and 3 at the Kansas City 15 with 12:46 to play. They're losing by 3 points in the Super Bowl, and they go for it, and they draw up the play that they treasure most, and it's the safest play in their mind, the play that will absolutely get it done. And it was Brock Purdy to George Kittle, who was quiet this game and exited in overtime with a shoulder issue for 4 yards. They pick it up. That sets up the Juwan Jennings touchdown. Let's listen to that touchdown by Jennings.
Purdy in the shotgun. McCaffrey left. Jennings outside of Ayuk right. Juszczyk and Kittle are tight left. Purdy back. Purdy throws. It is caught by Juwan Jennings. Breaks a tackle. Touchdown! San Francisco!
the savior, Juwan Jennings. The savior. What a dart versus tight man coverage. And Juwan is able to shake loose of that first tackle, reignite, and then punch it into the end zone.
And that was one, Mark, one of the multiple chances, both early in the game where it was like you could have really jumped out to a dominating type lead, or late in the game where it's kind of in your hands now. And in that case, you're now winning because you took the chance and you're rewarded with the touchdown. You're winning in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. It's closeout time. And yet, time and time again in the San Francisco 49ers history in the last 15 years, they just can't find a way.
Well, and you know, we were in the end zone for this, and I recorded that Jennings touchdown thinking, now that's an interesting moment to have on tape. But then I press pause and stop recording, and the PAT is blocked.
Yes.
That makes it 16-13 when it would have been, you know, then you're forcing the Chiefs to go score a touchdown at that point.
And it's, I don't want to get on Moody, because Moody also, for a brief time, for about an hour and a half, had the all-time record for longest field goal before Harrison Butker bested him. But missing the PAT, getting blocked there, immediately you're thinking, how does that happen? And it wasn't like a breakdown in the blocking. It was a low kick. A PAT has to go higher. So that's Moody, who, if you listen to this show, under the radar X-Factors was the kicking game and how that would potentially play out. That, instead of being a four-point game, being a three-point game, really set the table in a lot of ways for everything that happened after. And San Francisco mistakes, and Niners fans know it. It was really, as someone, again, it's always bittersweet going to these Super Bowls, because I always think about what it would be like if my team was ever here and how stressful. I had this knot in my stomach being 10 feet away from a largely 49ers contingent. And you could say, people could say, oh, the 49ers fans, they've had so much to celebrate. And they have had a lot of success, but we're going on over a quarter century since they won a Super Bowl.
You're like a 35-year-old.
That's what I mean.
You haven't seen anything.
Everyone in the section in front of me, for the most part, looked like guys and women that were in their 30s, 20s, 40s. And so to not be able to get it done once again, and when you think about, again, block PAT, a muff punt that sets up the first Kansas City touchdown on a game where, before that happened, it wasn't clear that the Chiefs were ever going to score a touchdown, because they looked a lot like the Christmas Chiefs, like the December Chiefs on offense, until they got set up on a short field, and that kind of kicked them into high gear. And then, Greg, 0 points off two Kansas City turnovers. So there were so many opportunities, and they just let these opportunities go to waste. And when you do that against Mahomes, it may sound like a cliche, but you just know you're asking for it.
You can break down this game in so many different ways to fit whatever narrative that you want to have. Like the 49ers defense in the end couldn't get it done. They couldn't get a stop to win the Super Bowl. But the first 9 possessions of the game for the Chiefs resulted in 6 points. 9 possessions is sometimes the whole game. Like, if your defense plays well enough to give up 6 points in 9 possessions, and you're the 49ers, and granted, it's not against the Chiefs usually, but that is often a 23-6 win, and the game's already over. And so you fault the offense, certainly, for not taking advantage more during that stretch of the game. But I don't want to hear anyone actually kind of come after the offense and Purdy for not coming up big enough in the biggest moment, because the reality is they got the ball in the fourth quarter trailing, and they went and scored a touchdown with a fourth down conversion. Then they got the ball back again in a tie game in the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl with 5:46 to go, and you're thinking, oh, this is legacy drive. This is Brock Purdy. Can you do it? He had a couple very nice plays on that drive. You obviously would have loved to pick up that third down I talked about earlier, and the drive stalls, but you did get a field goal to take the lead in the Super Bowl in the fourth quarter when you absolutely need to. You get the ball in overtime. It's the same thing again. I thought that was going to be the CMC drive. CMC ends this game with 160 yards and a touchdown on 30 touches, and that shows his value. And yet, in terms of running the ball, they didn't really get into a great rhythm the whole game until that drive. And it's sometimes these little plays. He had a 2nd and 4 in the red zone, you know, inside the 10. And I think it was Travell Wharton and Mike Pinnell, like their deep backup, stop him there. And they at that point, they decide to throw it on the next play. It's like, if he kept rolling there, if they block a little better there, they get a 3rd and 1, or they keep running. I thought in overtime, he was just going to run the ball down the field, which is CMC. We've seen them have those drives and they just come up a play short. So it's hard to kill any one particular part of the team.
I don't think the offense played well enough, though, San Francisco, ultimately.
In the final four quarters,
when you look at this game, you kept on waiting. Where was that big chunk play? Where was the huge Ayuk play, the huge Debo play? Kittle, where was Kittle most of this game? CMC was workmanlike, and I had a lot of respect for him because by the end of that game, you could tell he was hurting because he getting 30 touches in the Super Bowl at the end of a long season.
These two teams look so tired in person, both of them.
I kept on waiting for McCaffrey, even on that last drive, and they could have won the Super Bowl potentially, although KC's going to get a chance to get the ball because the overtime rules are different, which is stupid to me. Why can't they be uniform? McCaffrey could never make that one extra guy miss to go 50 yards, and the explosive nature of their offense was missing, and I think Purdy plays a role in that, too. He didn't hit on a couple of throws as well, and they were just missing that little extra special something that a Kyle Shanahan play caller with that amount of talent, we're just missing that special play.
I think they ran into a defensive scheme that figured out how to put pressure on Purdy, how to make things difficult, take those big plays away, and, you know, on that overtime drive where they go up at the field goal, when we've kind of broken down the end of that, remember how it started, and it was like it was very quickly, suddenly they were at third and 15, and Purdy throws a wobbly incomplete pass, but then defensive holding reopens the door. I mean, it's like, right. And it wasn't a bad call necessarily, it's not that, it's just that like that one mistake by the Chiefs, otherwise this game could have been over about 15 to 20 minutes earlier.
To your point, Dan, on not getting the big plays, Ayuk, 6 targets, only 49 yards, long of 20. Debo, 11 targets. And, man, I wouldn't have guessed this watching it live. I wasn't box score tracking that closely. 33 yards on 3 catches, long of 12.
Was not healthy in the second half of the game at a hamstring issue.
The most open guys in the game were a couple big plays by Conley and McLeod, actually. So those are their 2 star wide receivers. And then Kittle ends up with 4 yards on 3 targets. It is hard to win that way. And they had some next-gen stats here during the game, and it was really interesting how...
Shout out Bill Smith and next-gen stats.
Absolutely. Getting it done. The average contested catches in terms of like the percentage of throws that were into tight windows, the Chiefs actually had far more throws that were into wide-open receivers than the 49ers, who had very few throws that were open, which is not what you think. And again, that's a credit to the Chiefs defense.
And like there was this one, you know, mysterious injury in the middle of the game where you lose Dre Greenlaw. Like as he's coming out onto the field, he tears
his
Achilles.
Awful.
And Dre Greenlaw is like the 49ers allowed the fewest yards per attempt on targets over the middle third of the field since drafting Warner in 2018. And so that's Greenlaw as well. So it's like, to lose Greenlaw there was, I think, a secret disaster for the Niners.
Some of those Rice catches, I think about. Noah Gray catches had a couple. That's right where Greenlaw...
And watching that, and we're way up in the auxiliary box and have no access to television, so it's a bit of a weird experience on some levels when you're watching the game.
We had no internet for half the game.
No internet for half the game. And then when you check your phone and you see Dre Greenlaw is just bouncing on the balls of his feet on the sideline. It went in to take the field. I think it was maybe the second possession of the game.
It was early, yeah.
And he goes to plant, and the Achilles just goes, which is just unbelievable. And so you feel snake bit a little bit if you're the Niners at this point. Here's Kyle Shanahan, who, like we said, just like we talked about with Lamar. And I know it's annoying to Lamar, me, and everybody else, but you don't get to stop talking about the thing until you get that thing off your back, and it's the monkey of... Are you a champion or are you not? Here's Kyle, once again, falls just short on the loss.
I mean, we all hurt. I mean, everyone knows how it feels, and don't have a lot of words for it, but obviously we're hurting. Our team's hurting, but that's how it goes when you put yourself out there. I'm real proud of our guys for, like, no regrets with our team. I thought our guys played so hard today. Not everything was perfect by no means, but... I'm going to lose with a group of guys. It's do with those guys anytime. And we'll take some time. We'll get over this and come back next year ready to go.
I mean, you can hear in his voice like the true emotion in the raw like nature of getting this far again. And it's like even when they've bowed out in the NFC title game, they've been brutal losses where they've been close and you look back and think to yourself, you know, last year was injuries. Obviously, but, you know, in other years, it's just like, oh, a couple plays here or there, and this game is littered with that sense of what could have been had just a few moments gone differently for the Niners. And it's like, Dan, we've now been to, and you as well, Greg, but like it predates you on by one year that like we saw them lose in bitter fashion to the Ravens way back when. Different team, obviously.
I was there with you.
You were there with me.
A few weeks ago, you actually had Wes there with a very distinct memory with Wes there. Wes not there. Yeah. But I was there with you.
Don't
that
turn
was
50.
My first time.
I knew it. I was thinking all these vivid memories from that
don't
weekend.
Don't turn 50.
Yes.
We had great time.
But we were, you know, the one we, like a couple years ago against the Chiefs, it's like you're up by 10 late in the game, and then, you know, they lose, and then Corona happens, and you're back here, and you can change everything if you're Shanahan. You know, it's his third, to flip it with Mahomes, it's the third time he's been up by 10, whether it's a coordinator or a coach, and there you go.
Here's more sound. Here's Shanahan on why they decided to take the ball first, considering the new playoff overtime rules.
It's just something we talked about with, you know, none of us have a ton of experience of it, but we went through all the analytics and talked with those guys, and we just thought it'd be better. We wanted the ball third. If both teams matched and scored, we wanted to be the ones who had the chance to go win, and we got that field goal, so we knew we had to hold them to at least to a field goal, and if we did, then we felt it was in our hands after that.
Doesn't really answer the question. I honestly think that it's going to be one of those things, and I forget who was the team. I want to say it was the Patriots, and then everyone just started deferring of games. I do think people will start to do that in playoff overtimes. Not that you're going to have a huge sample size. It just makes too much sense. I'm not going to kill Kyle Shanahan. I don't think it's the difference in this game. You could have made an argument that it helps the defense get a little bit of a rest. Certainly that Chiefs defense looked tired on that drive, but I do think it was an advantage for Kansas City. Like, look, they had a 4th-and-1 in their own end. Does Andy Reid definitely go for that? Probably, if it's the first possession. But no, he knows he needs to get a score in that drive, and it helped them out.
All right, let's take a break, and when we get back, we'll dig into more about this game, what we saw, and what it means for these teams going forward, and everything else. Do some housekeeping. And that was the Sunday Drive presented by Toyota. Let's go places. Learn more at toyota.com/Grand Highlander. Stay right there. More talk coming up next.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
I'll tell a quick funny story.
Please.
I threw a touchdown to this dude at the end of the game, and he looked at me. I said, and he had no idea. I said, dude, we just won the Super Bowl. And he blacked out. He had no idea. I was like, bro, because he didn't even celebrate at the beginning. I'm like, what are we doing?
Hey, well, I see you were talking about, okay, yeah, it's time to celebrate now.
There it is. NFL Network, Chris Rose with the interview. Mahomes. Why does this always happen? Why I feel like this happens like every other year, major sports moments in different sports, and guys achieve greatness and don't even know like the game is over. Why are the rules so unclear?
Well, I'm also surprised that there wouldn't have been a conversation in the huddle like, we can win this right now if we get this thing done. Like, it was just that conversation obviously done, but we were watching Mecole Hardman make the catch, and it is absolutely true that in live action, like, his body language was like, great that I scored a touchdown, but there's probably more to go in this game. And right. It's like, no, the game is over. And then, like, suddenly everyone's running towards him. You could see the reaction. It was just like,
probably a pretty, like, amazing feeling when they're like, bro, it's over. We just won the Super Bowl. He's like, oh.
And you cool. just won.
Ah, notable.
You just caught the game-winning touchdown
right.
in the
but
Super
how
Bowl.
How is it all? Are you processing all that? It's like in the course of 5 seconds after
like,
all that.
No matter what happens for the rest of your life, Mecole Hardman, you could be happy that you got traded back to the Chiefs or whatever happened for a disastrous. For the rest of your life, you will be game-winning.
And by the way, spare me all the mentions. It's so fun being a Jet fan, by the way. All the mentions like, I can't believe you let that guy go. He is comfortably on the teat of the greatest quarterback who's ever lived. So good for him. Bullied a Mecole. I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
But the idea that we let a great one get away, it's great that Mecole is back with the Chiefs because that means he's back with Patrick Mahomes, who's allowing them to have great moments.
What
and
clown
win
is
Super
wasting
Bowls?
Their time tweeting that at you? On
Have you ever been on Twitter?
No, I have. It's a terrible place.
Wretched world.
Yeah. I think Mecole being the type of guy who didn't know it's the end of the Super Bowl when he just won the Super Bowl is like one of the reasons he might not
if
be
if you
there.
Love that joke, how about like the 400 bozos that sent me the joke last Thursday? Oh, wait, so a guy almost dying on the field isn't as hard as coming back from playing quarterback for the Jets. Nice one. Another Joe Flacco burn against the Jets.
Like, that is right. Funny. That is
sit
funny.
Down. Sit down. You shouldn't have won. All right. Let's see. Let's do some odds and ends, some thoughts, some takeaways. I'll start with, I got to give some love to Chris Jones. I don't write the free agency 101. But maybe I'll have some conversations with the editor. Maybe a little power play on Rosenthal.
You just got to swipe it?
Little swipe it.
Well, we did have our own at one point. You and I had our own list at one point.
Okay, we're not taping any shows next week. The 101 is due the Wednesday following that. So I just want you to know that.
I'm on it. A little palace intrigue. I'm coming for the 101. But Chris Jones will be the number one player on that list. Chris Jones, when it's all said and done, whether it's Kansas City that signs him, I don't know how they – listen, I never try to figure out how a salary cap works, but if you have a $500 million quarterback, I don't care how the contract's spread out, Chris Jones, I think, is going to be the highest-paid defensive player in the history of the sport when he gets his deal, right? And if not, he'll be close.
It'll be about it.
And he showed you in this game – why he'll be worth every penny, because he was a constant menace. We talked about the play where he might have saved the season with his pressure of Brock Purdy. Time and time again, he was ruining. You were watching. One of the cool things about being at the game, you could kind of get the all 22 in real time, and there were multiple plays where it felt like Purdy, if he just had that extra beat, was going to hit some of those big plays I talked about were missing, and they were missing in large part because Chris Jones is an absolute menace to society and just getting after in the backfield. So I don't know what his final numbers were. It wasn't like one of those he had four sacks or anything. But that's why it goes a little deeper than that. He was constantly in the backfield and making plays.
When you look at the Chiefs' playoff wins over the last 4 years, in almost all of them, Chris Jones made some massive play on third down to end a drive to win the game. To me, he's like a rich man's Dont'a Hightower, who always stepped up in the absolute biggest spot. Like, he was a good player that went to a great player in the playoffs. Chris Jones is a great player that goes to like a first ballot Hall of Famer in the playoffs, and that's what he'll probably end up being now because of everything he's done in the regular season, but especially in these
playoffs. And it's like, that's one reason I, as we head into the offseason, in the narrative's changed and what we focus on changes, last September 11th, he ended his holdout. It's like, I don't know why I spent 5 minutes talking about his holdout. There's no way he was not going to play for the Chiefs this year.
I kind of remember us being, we were pretty smart about how we handled the Chris Jones holdout. We didn't waste a lot of
conversation. We were, but it's just still, you know, it's still a conversation.
Here's a stat point backing up how dominant he was, even if it didn't register in certain categories. Per Next Gen Stats, again, Jones generated a team-high 6 pressures on 35 pass rushes, 3 of which occurred in under 2.5 seconds. So just Purdy snaps the ball. He's not even to the back of his drop, and he's already being swarmed and almost maimed by this fearsome player who's one of the best in the league.
An all-timer. Like Andy Reid. I thought it was really interesting that Kelsey immediately started talking three-peat after the game. It crossed my mind, could Kelsey retire? Sometimes this season he's moving slowly, he's getting up slowly. Forget that. And Reid obviously made it clear that he's not going to. And I know numbers.
As did Clark Hunt after the game that he was, what did he say?
That was my, that was one of my sandwich props. I think. Oh, no, it wasn't. No, it was my hot prediction for NFL.com that Reid or Kelsey would retire. It's like, bury that prediction.
Clark Hunt, quote, fully expects Andy Reid to return.
And Reid's not going to pass Belichick or, Lombardi in terms of Super Bowl titles.
I don't know.
If he wants to coach for a long time, he can make a run at the wins. And considering the influence he's had on offenses in this league, I mean, he is getting pretty high up there in the greatest all-time coaches list.
I was going to mention him, too, because it kind of reminds me there's different versions of Andy Reid, the same way we talk about like Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in different eras of their career. And it kind of reminds me of like when you were a kid and you learned that like Abraham Lincoln lost 8 elections before and failed at business twice before he finally won. And it's like Andy Reid went 20 seasons before winning a Super Bowl. And so it's like, I'll flip it around and I'll look at Kyle Shanahan and say, it's like, how do you come back from this? And it's like, Kyle Shanahan keeps getting there, and it's tough to come back. And like, there's going to be a lot of questions about like what they do and what happens with Brock Purdy and all that stuff. I think he absolutely, to me, is the dug-in starter. I want to hear a lot of nonsense around that. But Andy Reid, like, you go back to some dark times with the Eagles and was essentially like escorted out by the Eagles in the end. Goes to Kansas City and like, look where we are now.
Well, there's all these, so many people everywhere you look. Every time you turn when you're at Super Bowl weekend, it's somebody that you watch on TV or been watching your whole life. Sal Palantonio of ESPN, we shared an elevator up with him up to the auxiliary box here in the stadium this morning. And I told him that I had a memory, and Sal's been covering the NFL forever for ESPN. He covered the Eagles. He was kind of their reporter during their McNabb glory years. And I remember like a cold January, them throwing to Sal when they had lost multiple NFC title games. They were trying to get over the hump, and he was trying to explain, you know, how important it was for Philadelphia and Andy Reid to finally get to a Super Bowl, which they did. They lost to the Pats. But that was Reed's legacy for a long time, that he got close but couldn't get over the top, and now all he does is get over the top. So you say, like, he's not going to catch Belichick? Belichick has what, 6?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying, he's halfway there, and he's got a Patrick Mahomes,
so
who's 27 years old.
Fair.
Stranger things have happened. That's all I'm going to say.
And if you don't have Patrick Mahomes, maybe you do retire. I mean, now it's like, why stop doing this at all?
You never know.
This is a random odds in it, but Ben just being live, the British TikTok guy was right. We got to do something about these kickoffs. The whole stadium is so live, it suddenly goes from all this noise to like this great hush. We were, you know, right before the opening kickoff, it's so tense, and then it's just like, oh, here's a play that doesn't even count, and then there's like 45 seconds of just f***ing around. It's like,
well,
such a waste of time.
Easy.
Overtime is going crazy, and we're all excited. Like, before overtime, the 49ers fans are going wild, and then they line up for the kickoff, and oh, wait, here's a play that actually doesn't count unless it's take a 45-second break. It's bad. It's legit bad for the sport. They got to eliminate the kickoff, or they got to change back the rules to make it happen again.
I like Greg has found a new campaign. I like
yes.
this.
Yes.
It's a fresh
and if you
new
eliminate
campaign.
The kickoff, you might as well not call it football anymore. You got to have kickoffs, and you got to – and talk about – you want to talk about something kind of parallel to this? They ruin the onside kick, and I know, and this is where people are like, tisk, tisk, you don't support player safety. It's like, calm down, first of all.
These guys coming at you, too.
Get off your soapbox, okay, White Knight. Get off your shiny horse. I don't want to hear it. It's one thing to promote player safety and try to figure out ways to make the game safer, but if it comes at the expense of the product in the obvious way it does, like the kickoff and how it's drawing energy out of the game and it makes the game worse, maybe there's another way to go about it. And I'm fine,
eliminated. Just start at the 25-yard line. At least we'd have a play.
Then we're all right. Why don't we just make it arena football? Let's make
there's
it 150 yards.
There's something
the field.
Like visually
arresting about it.
I mean,
yeah,
and
yeah.
yet, like, the stadium came to a hush, and I thought that, I mean, the stadium experience, like, this is an incredible stadium, and it's really well
very
organized.
Nice facility, yeah.
But one comment I thought, like, by halftime, and I get the fans didn't have a lot to cheer about, and it got really loud at the end, but it just seemed almost not Super Bowl-like to me the first half.
The game flow was herky-jerky early on. Not a lot of scoring. There's extra commercials. But I felt the same way. And I thought, and you had a DJ here, DJ Cat. Eric, our resident clubhead.
It was Cascade, no
Cascade.
DJ.
You
no
like
DJ.
Cascade? Where does he rank on your DJ power rankings?
I'd give maybe top 10 for me personally.
Did you go out this week and hear any?
No,
you know,
no.
DJ
I had an invite to the Gronk beach party. Didn't make it to that.
Right.
But that's too busy to go to.
Yeah,
the
it was
Gronk
a busy
party,
week, guys.
Yeah.
Busy week. I was, yeah. you know, heading the.
Robert's killed it this week, but I was talking to Eric. We did a walk around the upper deck here.
Yeah.
Before the game started, and Eric was telling me about his club days, which we can't get into too much detail.
Yeah, Cascade, very good DJ, top 10 for me, but not my style of music. I was going.
Well, we didn't get Tiesto.
No,
and that's a shame.
Tiesto had a quote, "family emergency."
Yes, which I always assume is something other than
a little less like intrusive than the Rams DJ.
Oh, that's
yeah. SoFi could take a note or two from this.
Screaming in your ear every 5 seconds.
I felt like there have been in recent Super Bowls buildings that were going a little harder, but I think the game flow had a lot to do with that, because in the second half and overtime, the place was going off. Speaking of families in crisis or family emergencies, how about the families connected to those guys that ran on the field? How do you get onto the field in the Super Bowl in 2024?
I'll tell you why, though. I think you can, because we were. It's not like there was insane security down here. And like he came out on the sort of back corner end a little bit, right?
Hold that thought.
Did notice that they weren't checking to go down to the seats.
I have more thoughts. Here's Kevin Harlan, who has the iconic, the guy is drunk.
Yeah.
So he had an opportunity. I have not heard this. No one's heard this yet. Harlan calling in real time. Two fans, not one, but two, running on the field in the second quarter of Super Bowl 58.
The ball was caught, and the gain was to the 39.
I love Harlan.
And they have stopped play with security all over the interlopers.
Interlopers. Interlopers is such an underrated.
He is a poet.
The guy is drunk.
He is a poet.
Underrated. But so here's the thing. How much does it cost to go to a game, the Super Bowl? A couple $1,000, $3,000, $10,000. So somebody dropped the money to get into the building with the sole intention, unless it was something that was, not premeditated, to get arrested? That's a wild, talk about all-time bad decisions.
Right. Or maybe the guy was drunk.
The guy is drunk.
But you're right. Unless there was some other plot. Yeah, like, I want to hear more about
this. It was two guys.
Two guys. Like, I mean,
so it was a conspiracy.
Maybe it's one of these things like the Watergate break-in where someone opened a back door and in came these two guys without tickets. They weren't people that spent $20,000.
So that was a little extra entertainment. The other one I'll throw out there is the halftime show. I'd like to touch on the halftime show on this wrap up. It's fine. I thought Usher was fine. I give it a solid B. He did, I think, one of the moves you see with a halftime show sometimes is if you don't have, a certain extra gear to make it truly special, and very few artists do, like Prince, for instance, playing Purple Rain in the Rain. If you don't have that, not to say I don't love Yeah, and you get Ludacris out there doing Yeah and Lil Jon. That was the heart of it. But I think they sometimes... you'll see these halftime acts. They'll just throw something against the wall. It's like, all right, throw 500 people out there at the same time. Put everybody on roller skates and then get the band back there and then have 700 more people come from all directions. And it's kind of they're trying to spam you with. So I would say while it was an impressive coordination, I would give it, a B. It was a B.
I turned to Greg, because I'm not a big Usher person. Like, I was like, Greg, honest question, like, was that good? I just don't know what that was.
And I was like, yes, I think it was good. Like, he danced his ass off. He worked a lot harder, certainly, than
his bod is looking great.
He did look good.
He worked hard. Like, my timeline couldn't have loved it more. I think if you were, it actually might be his peak. I feel like, even though we were in our young 20s, I feel like if you're like 35 to 40, like your peak, people are loving it. It's fine.
It's fine. That's what I said.
I saw people calling it.
That's what I said. I said it was fine.
I saw people calling it the best halftime show ever, and that's what threw me. I'm like, that's not what I watch.
Those are simple folk that just see. Oh, there's
no, but they're just like Usher. They're just Usher fans. And
how do you know? How do you know who said that?
I think if you like Usher, this was an incredible.
How are you so certain about everything, Greg?
Because
what is it?
Because like everyone on Twitter that I'm following that loved it was just talking about.
So does the world end with everyone that you follow on Twitter?
Well,
is that what this is?
What we're basing it on, yeah, okay. Pretty much.
Okay.
This is our Super Bowl. We're going here with our Super Bowl.
Oh, it's part of the Super Bowl. No, it's the spectacle of it all. No, but I thought it was fine. What would you give it? Go ahead, give me a grade.
Eight out of 10.
Okay. All right, give us another odds and ends.
One quick thing is that the Kelce bumping Reed, because I believe he was mad that he wasn't on the field. I'm glad it worked out that way. Like, if Andy Reed was not... a man of his carriage, if he was, let's say, like Mike McDaniel's size.
He gone.
He's hitting the ground.
No, he's not gone.
And he's hitting the ground, and it's a bigger deal, and it looks worse.
It's a massive. It's a story that maybe wins a sandwich wrap, which we'll get to in a little bit.
And I'm glad it wasn't a big deal. It's football. It's emotional. He shouldn't have done it, but it's also, like, everyone's fine with it. But I saw A.J. Brown tweet out, if that was me, I would have been kicked out of the league, which, he's got a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek, but I think he has a point. If A.J. Brown did that, if Stephon Diggs did that, if Terrell Owens did that, people's reaction would have been different. So just, remember that and keep that same energy when people that are really passionate and love the game lose it a little bit. Like, have the same grace for them that you have for Travis Kelce.
I totally agree. I think there was license because it was Kelce, and then after the game, Reed and Kelce are up on the stage together, and Kelce's, leading the entire crowd in Viva Las Vegas, and it's all very Kelce-ish, and it works, except, that moment feels lost in time. And I'm sure Reed and Kelsey will be fine and call it, you know, competitive nature and all that stuff. But it's like, you can't do that to your own coach. I'm not trying to be overly, you know, officious about it, but
here's kind of a funny thing, lost in all the week-long run up to the game where it just gets exhaustive and all these guys are forced to talk over and over and over again. Someone asked, I think it was Mahomes at media night, opening night, like, are you Coach Reed's favorite? And they asked Kelsey the same thing, and they asked some of the other guys, like, who's Coach Reed's favorite? And a lot of the guys are saying Kelsey, and then they asked Mahomes, like, and he disputed, he's like, no, I'm Coach Reed's favorite. Like, and he pointed out it was almost like usually it's the younger brother, but in this case it's the older brother that just gets away with murder. Like, he doesn't put in – and Mahomes, to make his point, was saying, like, he always shows up just in time. Like, I'm in the building for hours before he gets there. Like,
yeah.
He's always acting up, and he talks too much and all this stuff. Like, Travis Kelce is – it's kind of spoken out loud around this. He's kind of a pain in the ass, but because he is who he is, that also leads to him getting – grace. So, yes, it's a good thing Andy didn't take a spill, or that would have been a huge story.
And I don't know how the TV, like, feed handled the Taylor Swift thing. I'm sure there was a lot of it. But I did enjoy the moment when she just – they go up to her, and there was a lot here in the stadium. Like, she's just chugging a beer like a pro. And, I mean, she's with the right boyfriend for that, because he can do that as well with quite a bit of skill.
You know who's – Jason Kelce is in our hotel.
Right.
He walked out
– probably there right now.
Oh, my God.
No, he's going to the Chiefs party.
True.
You know when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, when you see the Margot Robbie character.
Sharon Tate
and Roman Polanski returning to LAX, and it's the slow motion, like, kind of tracking shot of them, and they're the most fabulous, like, couple possible, and it's fame personified. That's what it looked like being right behind Jason Kelce leaving the hotel on the way to get in our car to come to the stadium. The guy is a rock star. Like, who has enjoyed a better run in terms of celebrity than Travis's brother? Really, both Kelce brothers. And we saw their producer and our former producer, TD,
right
in the lobby. And that was a nice thing, too. So I guess we're connected.
It's going to be a tough time for them when we create one of the larger upsets in media and win the iHeartRadio Sports Podcast of the Year, knocking out the Kelce brothers.
That's Super Bowl III, if we could do that.
So TD, he was our producer back when we played that clip with Chris eating the softball pants back in the day. So
he went and got all that, the meal.
It all connects.
All right, let's take one more break, and when we come back, some final thoughts, and we'll go over our locks and our sandwich props.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Chiefs Kingdom! Y'all hear this? We've been fighting for all right all day. How about a little Viva Las Vegas? Viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Oh, God.
Viva!
A nightmare.
Las Vegas!
There it is. Travis Kelce on the field with CBS. Jim, and by the way, Nance, come on, bud. Like, It's this media thing, taboo thing, to ask him about Taylor, like, face-to-face or even mention her. When he's singing, you can make a little joke there, like, oh, yeah, maybe Taylor will have you on the next album, and then have him, Jim, a rare drop of the ball, and then he forces, as a follow-up question at the end, okay, now sing the Beastie Boys song for the 7,000th time. We don't need it, Jim.
It's a missed opportunity by a pro.
And I'm curious where CBS, because, again, we didn't get the telecast, I'm curious how much restraint they showed with Taylor Swift, or whether they were, like, all about it. But we had some boots on the ground. We have a new rising insider on the videographer ranks. You want to get into that?
Yeah, the weekend got going with my son Luke is there. You know, I didn't even know this existed, but he has got into something called plane spotting, where you know, we live near LAX, and, like, there's a number of places you can go and just you post up, and the planes are coming, like, right over you and landing. And so you get incredible footage that there are these, like, hobbyists in other parts of the world that don't have that access. And, like, he built this Instagram account and TikTok and YouTube and all this stuff, and it's kind of blowing up. And it blew up hardcore because he's got all this data and like software and apps to know exactly what kind of planes are coming in. And you can see from like miles away, and like he captured Taylor Swift's plane landing at LAX before they got up and went to Las Vegas. And he went on TikTok and got like, I don't even know what the number is now, but it was like 1.6 million at some point. And it's it's at LAX plane spotting. It's easy to find on any
Luke
of those accounts.
Luke is, what, 11-year-old boy?
He is 13.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and he's obsessed with it. He does it like five, six times a week. But like he caught the Cardinals plane one time, and they retweeted him. But no response from Taylor Swift yet. But it did do well with the public.
That is incredible. While you're talking Suns, this was Walker's first Super Bowl.
Good one.
I got to bring him to and hang out with him ahead of the game. And it's awesome. I mean, we are extremely lucky, but to see his excitement and just for him to be in the building when I'm that excited and then to be with him, it feels amazing. And then we walk in and, like, Cynthia's on the Jumbotron doing next-gen stats, and then Colleen is taking over and was a very big presence of the in-stadium presentation.
Yeah, great star.
And it just feels like, wow. It just feels like it's crazy that it's the Super Bowl, and yet it feels small for us. We're very fortunate. Even just, it's one of the great things about being with the NFL is those tickets they give us, first of all. Mm-hmm. It's like the best perk of all time that you can share it. And then for it to feel like a home game, that it's like our people, and yet it's like presenting the Super Bowl. It's incredible.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to take two of my friends from way back in the day, from elementary school days.
What do you think they're doing right now?
I don't know. It's a long day. Super Bowl's a long day.
Yeah.
So they're back at the hotel probably, and I'll find out. We're going to be heading back ourselves in just a few minutes. But I've been able to now to take all my best buddies from New York, both my parents, my in-laws, brothers, sisters. It's been it's to share this experience, the Super Bowl, not just the game, but the whole weekend and being in the city. It's not for the meek of heart in terms of financially. It's crazy expensive, everything around the Super Bowl, and especially here in Vegas. But if you're a football fan, if you ever get the chance to experience the Super Bowl once, it's unlike anything else. It's so fun to share.
Although maybe don't
people.
Do the Vegas one if you're trying not to spend as much money.
What
as
do we
possible.
Think about Vegas as the Super Bowl host?
It'll be back. It'll be in the
rotation. Well, that I didn't doubt, but what did we think about it?
They handled it all, like, well. It's all intense for our selfish purposes. It's like, you know, it's tough to get a coffee or a breakfast for, like, less than $40 or, like, a 30-minute wait. So that's a bit of a tricky spot. But to me, it all ran well, and, like, it just makes sense.
I thought it was run really well, and it's, like, it at least, with, like, the very from a reporting angle. Like, I don't even know what it's like to be a fan of these things at this point, but, like, You go from A to B to C to cover various things. And
it was good.
Relatively easy to do that. I just think in general, like staying in Vegas for like 6 days is not a great plan as a human.
Not for long-term health or living a long life. All right. I thought it was good as well. It was Saturday. The gridlock was out of control. So, yeah, there are elements of it that are just kind of a pain in the ass. But I thought the city was really well-equipped. And it was kind of the thing that I realized when I was thinking about it last night. Was the energy of everybody wanting to have the best time possible and being in a really good mood is kind of the energy if anyone has ever gone on a guy or a girl trip to Vegas with your friends and you're in that same headspace. So you're taking that type of headspace and then bringing the Super Bowl, which is kind of the similar thing, and adding it up. It's kind of like endorphin-wise,
it was
steroids.
Intense. It was like as Super Bowl-y, Vegas-y as it gets. It was a little intense.
I was walking the lobby like after 2 a.m. last night, and the place looked like it was 5 p.m. Like, this is an absurd,
right? It's an airport,
strange,
basically. Airport
beautiful,
mentality.
Horrible, insane place. Everything rolled together. It's the American experience. All right, let's talk about our locks. Greg, you have finished a incredible season, and I just want to say congratulations. I mean, I believe where did we finish? You locked up the Chiefs.
I did lock up the Chiefs.
As did I, and I think you finished the season. 18-4? Does that sound right?
19-4, I believe.
That's by far the best record of all time. It simply has to shatter anything else.
18 weeks and then what, 4 rounds of playoffs?
5 playoff weeks. I got one playoff wrong for sure. Start off.
Unbelievable. That's going to be tough. You want to talk about, you did repeat as champion. Good for you. You're going for 3-peat as well.
You're the Chiefs.
Yes. Congratulations to you. I closed famously incredibly strong after a slow start, and I think people will remember that. I think I finished after being two games under more than halfway through the season to end up where I did. Really, a lot of people are talking about it, one of the great comebacks ever, to finish in second place, I believe. Mark, you made a different type of history.
Yes,
you
want
to get into it?
Yeah, I mean, I was informed at one point that this was like a month and a half ago, I had notched 9 wins. And it was like, just to let you know, I mean, of course, you're probably going to continue to win a couple more games here. That 9 would be the lowest win total
locks
of any
season.
Yeah. And if you think about it, we've been doing locks for, 10 years or something? Like, and there's always been, you know, there were 4 or 3 people involved. So that's many, many, many participants if you think about it. And I never won again. I finished with 9 wins. I don't even know how many losses.
0 for the playoffs is...
0 for the playoffs.
That's kind of hard to do.
I think from that angle...
It's crazy, too, because I think... Did you have the Lions? And they, like, had that big lead. And then you had the 49ers. They have big leads. So it just keeps...
Yeah, I'm almost... I would say from another angle, another point of view, it's impressive also. It's impressive.
Go ahead.
People are talking about this too, Dan.
And I'll give... Yes, people are talking. I will say that there was that... quiet storm intensity in the first half of the game. I could really feel you, Mark, needing the 49ers to win and Brock Purdy to fulfill his destiny as an all-time story. But you've been a pro and a trooper, and you haven't taken that into the podcast tonight.
I mean, we have Jay on our production team who is – his entire family is from the Bay Area, and he had to pretty much be on his feet working, turning away from the game during a lot of it. And he is a hardcore Niners fan. This is his whole family. And, you know, they melt down in a sad fashion and like – he just goes right about his business. That's the pro over there.
Yeah, great shout out to Jay and everyone behind the scenes, led of course by Eric and Matt Schneider, and the whole team that's made this thing go this week, this weekend, and this week in Vegas. Mark, you're a class act. That's all I can say. Finally,
I agree.
Let's hit our sandwich props. A lot of onion hangers. I could tell you mine. I said Kelce goes over 200 yards. Wins MVP, I believe. And when he was 1 for 1 at halftime, I was thinking to myself as I was walking to go to the bathroom at halftime, I was like, it's almost harder, like, in terms of what are the odds? Are the odds better that he goes 200 yards or that he could actually finish a game with 1 yard? But anyway, he ends up having a nice second half, but he doesn't approach 200 yards. So I am out multiple sandwiches.
Well, it's all going to even out, I have a feeling. I was not close with my Pacheco. We didn't mention him. He ended up with 92 yards from scrimmage in 24 touches, including 6 catches, 2 fumbles. A couple times were live. You could really tell he took the wrong angle, didn't have good instincts, almost seemed a little tight.
Didn't you also, like a couple weeks ago, inform America and Points Beyond that was the most solid Vegas option out there? And
what, Pacheco?
Yeah, just in general,
Yeah, so that did not work out well. Only 1 fumble.
Didn't bring
out
the Rainmaker, so the brand doesn't take a hit.
Smart.
Yeah,
keeps winning.
So but still, Pacheco also cost you sandwiches in yours, Mark?
Well, another absurd defeat. I said that some sort of event would occur because it had been too quiet in Vegas, that something would happen NFL-related that would become a kind of story that we'd track for the next 3 or 4 months and know right away, this is going to saddle us for
take you up on it because I felt it in the air too. Something would happen this weekend. Man, if Andy, God forbid, he trips on his feet after Travis bumps him and he breaks his hip.
That would have been huge.
That's it.
Yep. That would have been massive.
Or if Taylor Swift was jumping up and down celebrating in overtime and Ice Spice falls out of the luxury suite. We're cooking. We got to win.
That would have been it.
But we didn't get the win. And Ice Spice, though, Greg, is safe.
Greg likes rap.
Any other final thoughts on the game and where we are? It is incredible to and as annoying and maybe repetitive as this Chiefs dynasty coming on the heels of the Patriots relentlessly getting to the stage.
It literally is like one ended and the other just started.
It's a little
Packers
bit like
quarterbacks.
It wouldn't be the worst thing to have a few years where things get mixed up and then if the Chiefs really do have the goods the way the Patriots did, then they can maybe come back in a few years after the league gets let's mix it up a little bit. But at the same time, there's I remember it. I was young, but it was when I was first becoming a football fan. It was the Niners, and I know the Patriots, they went for a three-peat as well. But the Niners, I remember when they won back-to-back in the late 80s, and they had a chance against the Giants, the NFC title game at the Stick, and they lost, a 2-point game on a Matt Barr field goal late that ended their three-peat hopes. It is almost impossible, and I think they won the next year after that. It is almost impossible to they didn't actually.
Washington.
Yeah, yeah, it's almost impossible to win three in a row. We were talking, Greg, off mic, which I don't know why we would ever do that. We should always talk on mic. That it can't happen, right? They can only go down from here at a certain point, and yet they could. There's a path to this team getting better if they make a couple of moves.
Sure, but the weight of it, and we'll have all off season to talk about. I think the weight of trying to get that third. There's a reason why no one's ever done it. Trying to get a fourth in how many years would it be?
Four and six.
Whatever it is, like, that's something the Patriots were. I think the weight of it is really it. You could see it with this team. This team had a weight to it, trying to defend it all year. That was difficult. So it's going to be hard. But they're different than any other team since 2019. And this is my final thing I'll leave with, is that in the playoffs, teams trailing by 10 or other than the Chiefs are 6-48 trailing by 10 in a playoff game, and the Chiefs are 5-1 in those games. I mean, they can do it in any sort of way, but they can do it in a very particular way that you get up on them, and it's just never safe, and they're so complete, and this was a different type of team. And that's, to me, that's what dynasties, what greatness are made of, is that you realize, man, these football teams, they change so much from year to year. They really change over a three-year span, that you have to win in totally different ways. But the things that doesn't change is Mahomes and Reed. And as long as that's happening, like, they can find some other formula to get back here.
And I think actually, like, this win kind of lifts a lot of weight. I know that it would be, there's going to be a grind to go try to win a third, but it's not that they're playing with house money, because I think winning matters to them. Winning Super Bowls is going to be just an intense journey. And Andy Reid, I remember before the season, you know, we talked on the show about Andy Reid saying everything is reset. They had that rough and tumble training camp where they were getting into fights with each other. And it was like, we are resetting the board. And I think that the coach quarterback combination and really the other players on that team as well do as good a job of that as any team in sports. And so they've got $24 million in cap room. They sit right in the middle of the league. I know there's going to be some challenges on that front, but in general, they could go find weapons around Mahomes. You actually went and did this with a low octane offense. What happens if you go add like a true starting X wide receiver that brings back some of the playmaking ability around him?
But start with Chris Jones on the other side of the ball, because you take him out of the picture, Spags is not going to have near the same success. So there's challenges ahead, but we should know not to doubt the Chiefs, who are back-to-back champions, and they are the bad guys now. When they ran out of the tunnel here, it sounded like the old Patriots glory days, the way teams would, the fans would fill up and get on Brady at these Super Bowls. But they loved it. In fact, they were underdogs in each of their last three playoff games, won them all, and Patrick Mahomes was asked about being an underdog, and he said on the field, just know that the Kansas City Chiefs are never underdogs. Know that. Learned it. Go against the Chiefs at your own peril. And again, thank you to everyone around this podcast, which just completed its 11th season, which is unbelievable. It's hard to believe. We've been doing this since 2013. This was our 11th Super Bowl on site, and that's an amazing thing, and we obviously can't do it alone. So again, thank you to Eric, who had an amazing rookie year and a great week. Jay and all the team at Radio Row that helped us out. Matt Schneider was pulling a lot of the levers. Thomas Warren, the whole podcast team, and everyone back in Inglewood who helped make this happen. We don't do it alone. So thank you to everybody, and thank you to the listeners.
Love you.
Where would we be without you guys?
Nowhere.
Hanging around. Thanks for giving us a great life.
Thanks to everyone who come and said hi this week. It made, you know, I felt like we were getting a bigger pop than ever. Let's go.
That lifts the energy, absolutely.
All right, we're taking a week off. We'll be back in a bit. And until then, you know what you got to do. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.